Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Meta will stop treating teens like adults by curbing harmful material and reducing unwanted interactions from their Facebook and Instagram timelines. Peacock's AFC wildcard game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Miami Dolphins is the most viewed live stream event in U.S. history. OpenAI removes military application limits, bans the use of its tools in creating political ads, and prohibits the creation of GPT girlfriends. And we spotlight Chaz Sims, a member of Forbes 30 Under 30 in 2021 and CEO and founder of Y Systems, a logistics firm that has raised over $73 million. We got all this and more for you in episode 113 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly is your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. I would hate to be a Dallas Cowboys fan right about now.
What happened? I mean, I don't watch the NFL. Philly, there's a huge rivalry between the Eagles and the Cowboys, so everybody on all my feeds have been talking about it. But, like, what happened?
The Cowboys did what the Cowboys always do. They do great all the way through the regular season. They get to the playoffs, and they fail miserably.
They lay an egg.
I think exactly what they did yesterday.
Since the last time they won the Super Bowl, that was the 96 Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So we're talking 27 years. They have not made it past the first round. Well, that's not true. They've only made it past the first round of the playoffs, I think, four times. They have not made it to the conference championship since 96. And they had, by all metrics, a great team this year. And they got to they played so poorly. It's almost, you almost look at it as like, okay, are they throwing the game?
Right. It's
because it wasn't just mistakes.
Might just say the same thing about Philly these days. Like, they started off all undefeated and everything else. And it was after Jalen got hurt at one point, and it has been downhill since then. And I don't know what's going to happen with Philly right now.
Yeah, but I guess I'm not a real big, I'm a sports watcher. I wouldn't call myself a sports fan. I definitely wouldn't call myself a fanatic. But I think that's the problem or the issue with the Dallas Cowboys. They have some fanatics. And not only are they fanatic, they are in sometimes obnoxious. So much so that the rest of us almost kind of root for the Dallas Cowboys downfall.
Everybody roots for Dallas downfall if you're not an actual Dallas fan.
Just so we can kind of look on social media the next day and see the Dallas Cowboys fans and their reactions.
It's almost like
two things that are true. The Dallas Cowboys are the most valuable American sports franchise, arguably one of the most valuable sports franchises on earth. That is absolutely true. What is also true, they have done nothing in darn near the past three decades to deserve for their franchise to be that to be that big. And they've got a super cocky owner. Jerry Jones has never won anything. Mm-hmm. Anything. He's never won anything, but he is arguably the cockiest owner in sports. So, yeah, I was fully my wife is she is a Dallas fan. And I feel for her because it's like, y'all are not winning as long as Jerry Jones is owning that team. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, y'all, we got a lot of tech to get to. This is the first time the three of us have actually been on this year.
I know.
So yeah, it feels like we haven't talked to each other in a long time because we haven't talked to each other in a long time. It's been like 3-4 weeks since all of us have been on, but we got a lot that we want to get to. And so let's just jump in. And the reason we haven't been on is because Steph, you actually went to the Computer Electronics Show.
Yes.
Last week. So can you give us your lowdown of this show that I was supposed to go to? I even had a badge and everything. And I just decided the last minute I wasn't going to front that hotel room.
So I will preface all of this by saying I think I made a rookie mistake and just completely underestimated the enormity of the event and just
so
how.
So we say rookie mistake, meaning this is your first time going?
It was my first time going. Yes. Okay. I was actually supposed to go last year, but I ended up getting sick, and couldn't make it. So this was my first year. Cause I always said, like, ever since I started blogging back in 2011 and, you know, was doing the whole blogger thing and getting products, and everybody's like, you're going to CES, you're going to, and I looked at that price and I was like, I'm not going to CES until somebody pays me to go to CES. Mm-hmm. And it has taken since 2012 for somebody to actually want to pay me to go to CES. And, you know, again, like I said, I was supposed to go last year on behalf of Panasonic, but couldn't make it, unfortunately. So this year I went on behalf of one of the production companies that I do satellite media tours through. So we flew out on Saturday and our tour was on Monday and we actually flew out Monday. So I kind of missed the actual convention. I could have stayed, but it would have been on my own dime. And to your point, Rob, I was like, and by the time I was done working, like it's one thing to say I'm going. It's another thing to be going to work. You know what I mean? And you're in that work mode and you're like, let me go do what I set out, you know, but I came out here, what somebody is paying me to come out here to do. So with that being said, there were a couple things, like I said, that I would have done differently. Number one, I missed CES Unveiled, which is a media event that they have on Sunday.
Right.
There's a bunch of media events, a bunch of different media events that they have on Sunday, but CES Unveiled in particular is where you could go and see kind of a preview of what is to come on the floor at CES. I didn't go to that for a couple reasons. Number one, my call time on Monday was 4 a.m. to start broadcasting. So that meant I had to be up at 2:30 a.m. to get into full hair and makeup and get over to the space, our broadcast space, to start working. So because we went live at 5:15 and went straight through until like 9. This is all Pacific time. So CES Unveiled was from 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. on Sunday. And I was kind of like, I could have tried to get there for like an hour and capture a little bit of content and run around and see what I could see. But that event, all of the media events on Sunday were at the Mandalay Bay, which was on the opposite end of the strip from where I was staying. I was staying at the Westgate, which is almost virtually connected to the convention center where CES was happening. So to get to the Mandalay Bay, I would have had to get all the way down the strip. Again, rush, do this hour, you know, get back to my room. Cause I was in bed literally by like 7:30 because again, I had to be up at 2:30 a.m. for a 4 a.m. call time and I'm working. So as much as I wanted to go and see stuff and capture content and do all that other stuff, I'm like, I'm actually here to work and be paid. So I need to be prepared to work and be paid. And so I had a rehearsal on Sunday for the job that I was getting paid for. So by the time I got done with rehearsal, and got back to my room and everything else, the idea of trekking out to the Mandalay Bay to do CES Unveiled, it just wasn't happening. Because number two, the biggest rookie mistake again that I had was I didn't really understand the enormity of the event. CES is massive. Just like football fields worth of space dedicated to
you. Can't even say just football fields. You have to say multiple dozens of football fields.
Multiple football fields.
I want to say this year it would have been the equivalent of 37 to 41 football fields.
I can believe that.
How much floor space they had.
So it's, you know, it's insane. So think about coming out of a Vegas hotel, which is already a labyrinth in itself, cutting through the casino, getting through to the banquet area, cutting through that, then getting over to the, you know, the area, and then the broadcast area within CES was all the way literally in the back of one of the convention halls. I think there were like three main convention halls in the convention center. The broadcast booth was in. So now I'm walking easily 3 or 4 miles a day, just back and forth between my hotel room and our broadcast booth. So I've done that all day on Sunday. I still got to be up at 2:30 a.m. So I just didn't have it in me to go up to CES Unveiled to get any sort of footage or anything. So I pretty much missed that whole thing. I was able, though, I will say, I was able to, my producer who flew out there with me, knew somebody on the ground at the NBC affiliate in Las Vegas. And I actually did a segment for the NBC affiliate Sunday night that aired on their 11 p.m. news about, you know, kind of what to expect from CES. So I was kind of happy that I was able to do that. I wouldn't have been able to do that had I gone to CES Unveiled. So I kind of trade off with that. So then Monday comes, I do my job. We wrap around 9:30 a.m. Pacific. And I'm like, so I'll get some footage now of what's going on. Because again, CES doesn't start until Tuesday. So everybody was still setting up. Like most of the booths were not completed. They didn't have like the carpet down on the floor. It's funny. I got chased out of the LG booth on Sunday because I walked in and I was just literally holding my phone up, just recording everything I saw as I'm walking from the hotel through the convention center to our broadcast booth. And LG had this big, you know, they had walls up, curtains. It was very secretive, but there was nobody really telling you couldn't go in. So I just kind of walked in and started recording everything and taking pictures of everything. And it's literally me and a bunch of Asians. So I stuck out like a sore thumb. And so as I'm walking out, the guy comes up and he's like, no, you can't record. You can't record. He literally watched me delete my video and delete the recently deleted video in the release. So yeah, cause you know, they were the ones that did the transparent television. So they were definitely trying to keep that under wraps, you know, until Tuesday and everything else that they had in their booth. But I was able to get some footage after I finished working, of the SK booth, and it was amazing. Like they had a whole train and this whole tunnel with this interact. It was like the booths were ridiculous. I can say that because I was, you know, I did see them putting up booths and just the amount of money these companies spend on these displays is out of this world. I was just amazed at the creativity of the booths and just what they were able to do. I do, you know, regret not forcing myself to stay an extra day, just to be able to be there for Tuesday. Cause I think my credentials would have carried over until Tuesday. Like I said, I just had to, pay for the room. And then, you know, I don't know what I would have had to do with my flight or whatever, but like I guess next year, I'm sure I'll be back next year and be able to really sort of immerse myself. But the mental preparation to tackle all of that, the physical preparation to be on your feet on concrete all day long, walking miles and miles and miles to try to see stuff. Like it's a lot. It's a lot. And I just was not prepared for the scale of CES this year. And I just petered out. Like I couldn't hang. I'll admit I couldn't hang. It was a lot.
Mentioned the scale multiple times, and Rob, you talked about the football fields. It's at this point, as long as CES has been going on, and as more of the world kind of transitions to virtual, is CES unnecessarily large? Does it have to be that big, or is this just like a big write-off? And companies just go, I'm like, well, this is what it is. So we're going to spend the money and we can charge it off. and then just continue until something happens, right?
So here's why I didn't go. So I was actually, you know, I registered. I had my press credentials. I was ready to go. Would have had travel there, but I was going to have to pick up my own hotel. And I waited so late to actually try to book a room. So I was like, well, I'm going to spend like $2,000 trying to stay out here from, you know, from Sunday until Thursday.
Right.
So I was like, I just don't know that I want to do that. So I'm upset that it didn't just work out. I do definitely try to plan to get out there next year, and I'll just start planning now to go and do that. But the other part of it is, and this is why I don't feel as bad, because I've heard from multiple people that it's just kind of, it's like,
there's always those very few things, you know. There was a flying helicopter car thingy that got a bunch of, you know, attention. LG's transparent TV got a bunch of attention. A lot of people were doing this ice cream. There was like this ice cream maker that was like a Keurig. It had literally Keurig style cans that you put in this thing and the ice cream comes out the spigot. A lot of people talked about that. But if you notice, like, you know, I looked at a lot of different people's, what they were doing, like Jennifer Jolly was out there. Rich on Tech, Brian Tong, like all the sort of major tech influencers all had the exact same content of what was like the hottest sort of tech thing. And did you need to go out there just to see those few things?
So
maybe not.
And see, here's the other thing that is happening is that a lot of the biggest companies are no longer doing CES. You think about Apple. Apple's really never done it.
So it's never been
an Apple thing. But like Samsung has their own event next week. All right. No, it's not next week. It's two days from now. It's a Wednesday. So Samsung's Unpacked event where they're going to announce the Galaxy S24, 24 Plus, 24 Ultra. And I believe that they're announcing something called, Galaxy AI or something like that, about all the stuff they're going to be doing with AI. So they're doing their own event for that. So E3 is no longer, it's no longer its own event, but it broke off from CES because it used to be, well, they had of those football fields, they had one or two of them, but it kind of felt like they were always stuck in the back. They were always treated like the redhead stepchild. I was like, well, if we got to spend all this money to be treated like this, we could just spend the same money, do our own event. And even though that's gone away, they went and did their own thing. And you're starting to see a lot of other organizations to where even if they have a presence at CES, they still do their own thing so that they can get their own press run. And, you know, it's kind of funny that it seems like every year Samsung's Unpacked event gets closer and closer to CES. It's usually, if I remember correctly, it's usually like in February, but it's actually this week. It's on the 17th. So that's a big part of it as well. And it's like, you know, if you've never been the first time, you're going to, wow. It's just like you're literally walking and you see all of this technology. You'll be mesmerized by it. But I think I've been to CES now 4 times. The last time I actually went was 2020. So right before the pandemic, or 2019. I can't remember. So either 19 or 20 was the last time I went. And you know, that being my 4th time is like, okay, how many more TVs can I look at?
Right.
Now the drones, that's what I was all into. I think we talked about that last week, Terrence. I was definitely into the drone stuff, and I would have been if I would have gone out there this year just to see what kind of new flying stuff they've got. But there's only so many TVs. There's only so many ways you can make a laptop. And it gets, you know, kind of repetitive.
It is very redundant. And to your point, Terrence, it'll be interesting to see how it evolves over the, I think this year kind of felt like the return to the CES of old for a lot of people. I think there were like 130,000 people that came through there this year. So, you know, it was very well attended, to Saray's question, in the comments. It was very well attended, over 4,300 exhibitors at the event. And, you know, I think this, like I said, I think this was people's return to CES. So it'll be interesting to see if it maintains this level of scale going forward, because it did seem like a little bit of overkill. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. It was just too much. It was very overwhelming for me. And like I said, I'm going to have to start, getting in the gym or something before next year so I can like get my cardio up to even like be in those rooms and walking through those rooms and back and forth. Like, I mean, I would get back to my room and like my hips and my knees and maybe just giving away my age or something like that. My ankles is hurting because you're just pounding the pavement, literally, you know, moving through these convention halls. And it just really, really is, you really have to go with a plan. If that's your intention to go, you got to go with a plan and know exactly what you want to see, where those things are, go to those things specifically. But then even past beyond that, you got keynotes every single day. Yeah. You got all kind of speakers and panels every day. It's a lot.
So I was on Daily Tech News Show a couple times last week and then Headlines 3 days last week. And it was just interesting because like day one, I'm on because Tom Merritt is actually out there.
I was bummed I missed him because I was looking at his Instagram and I started to reach out and try to catch up with him. But I was like, oh, man, I missed Tom.
So, but yeah, so he's out there and like day one on Monday, he's all preppy and energetic and this and that, and the other. And then by Thursday, actually, my man is like sitting like this with his head leaning on. Listen, his eyes are all bloodshot.
It's a wrap. It's so much. It's so much. I don't know how people do it. The company I went with, this was kind of their first time back at CES doing satellite media tours, and it went over very well, you know, is what they're telling me. So they want to do something next year because we did kind of the preview, what to expect, but they're thinking about booking three of them. So it'll be a preview, it'd be live from the floor, and then a CES recap. So they want to do like three of them next year, with me. And so this is 3 days. I got to get up at, 2:30 in the morning, 4 a.m. call, like the whole nine, and stay there.
Careful what you wish for.
Listen, I'm just like, I'm not mad at that bag, but it would be a lot to have to be there all week long. It would be a lot.
Yeah. You see a lot of creators. They don't really have a lot of stuff coming out CES week because there's just no time for it. So it's like, their content I create, I got footage, I have stuff I'm going to show you. You're just not going to see it until after I get a nap.
Right. And if I go home and sleep for 24 hours and then exactly. Edit and everything else. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So y'all, in addition to CES last week, I actually read a really interesting Wall Street Journal article, and it was talking about how Meta is going to stop treating older teens like adults and is efforting to curb the material and reduce unwanted interactions on their Facebook and Instagram timelines. So Meta plans to automatically restrict teen Instagram and Facebook accounts from harmful content, including videos and posts about self-harm, graphic violence, and eating disorders. And I was just thinking about this because we've talked about this before. It would be lovely to say that Meta is doing this because, it's just the right thing to do. We've identified some things and it's just right to make our platform safer for children. But ultimately, I think it's 40 states now are suing them because Meta actually knows that much of their content that is targeted to teens is unhealthy for them. I mean, they actually have their own studies. We've talked about this, I think, on a couple of shows on the Tech John. So it's just interesting that, okay, yeah, you're making these changes, but are you making them because you're worried about the bag you might have to come up off of?
That's
or
all.
Because it's the right thing to do?
No.
But we didn't even mention this yet. It is Martin Luther King Day. So in the spirit of this being the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I want to offer Meta this, one of his most famous quotes. The time is always right to do what is right. That being said, and Steph, I specifically want to get your take on this. Do you think what they're doing is actually going to work?
No. And I don't even know that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. I just, number one, I don't know how you can claim to do what you say you're going to do when you actually don't know anyone's age. That's the first part. So how do you know this person's account is the account of a 16-year-old? I mean, you can kind of maybe look at the content and sort of glean from the content based on what they post, but how are you going to tell who is who? And, you know, are you scraping their bios to look for high school names of high schools, or, you know, like, what are you doing exactly to determine who these, you know, minors above age 13 are so that you can serve them up a particular brand of content? That's number one. You know what I mean? Like, how are you even going to determine that?
The honor system.
Yeah. And which already doesn't work because you already have 13-year-olds and younger on the platform that you can't control. So I think this is just a lot of lip service. And to your point, Rob, something to try to, appease the judges that are going to be ruling in all of these different states, lawsuits against Meta. I just think it's something that they're doing to try to appease judges at this point. Because there just really isn't a way to regulate the content on social media platforms in a way that makes any kind of sense whatsoever and is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Outside of going through a lengthy age verification process. I mean,
right.
Uploading driver's license.
Right. That's
security,
it.
Social security number. And, you know, companies don't want to do that.
They don't. And even if you did, people would still use fake IDs. And then, like, they're just, this genie is not going back in this bottle. I think we have to, I'm not saying stop looking to social media platforms to try to do something, because they do still have to take some responsibility for their content, you know, Section 230 be damned. However, this is also, you know, a parenting thing. This is a collective effort of us to try to figure this out.
And this is the problem when the content is curated by the people who join the platform. Now, if Facebook and Instagram and Meta and all these social media platforms, YouTube, had their own content that they push out to people, then they could try to do some age stuff or say, look, like TV and movie and songs, PG this, G that, MA this, whatever the case may be. Social media platforms don't do that. They are solely using our content that we upload. So it's up to, not necessarily up to us. It's much harder for a social media company to regulate content that the users, that the community puts up. If it was top down, then they probably could do a little bit more. But since it's bottom up, then all they can do is say, look, this is what interesting. This is shiny.
Right.
But outside of that, that's about it.
And they don't have any motivation to do anything like that anyway, because it's just like, it's money, it's ads, it's clicks, it's views. There's no motivation to try to do anything like that. And, you know, and they don't want to pay their moderators to do, if they were to implement some type of rating system like that, and then have it be able to be filterable, and parents could sort of enable, you know, filters for PG content or whatever. They don't want to pay the moderators and hire enough moderators to even do something like that.
Steph, you made a good point that part of the problem that Meta, even if they are earnestly trying to make this better, is that they don't have age verification. So it is very easy for a 14-year-old to say they're 24. Let me just add 10 years to my age and keep it moving. And
right.
And Facebook doesn't really check that out. And it kind of reminds me a sitcom that I used to, you know, my wife and I used to love to watch was Everybody Loves Raymond. Mm-hmm. And on that show, my favorite character was his older brother, Robbie, who's like, I think it's played by Robert Garrett or Peter. I can't think of his name, something last name Garrett. But the dude is like 6'8". He's a really tall guy and mm-hmm. would, you know, clearly would have been a tall kid. And there was an episode where it was about like their diaries and how their mother read their diary or whatever. And his older brother says, like, you don't have like a second set of books. It's like, well, where would I keep it? Bob searches everything. He's like, well, mine's down to Second National. He just went and got himself a P.O. box, or not a P.O. box, but an actual
safe deposit box
and put his actual diary there. And they kept one for his mom to read back at the house. And it's way easier than that today. Literally could just, oh, here's the account that my folks know about. Here's the account that they don't know about.
And here's my Finsta.
Yeah.
You know, they have a whole name for it. So yes. It's just like, yeah.
So the question comes in is where do parents come in on this? It's like, what can parents do to make sure that your kids don't have a second set of books, so to speak, on their devices? What can parents do to actually try to protect their children from the amount of content that's really targeted at adults that they could actually get to maybe a bit too young?
Right. Well, it's the conversation, right? And it's just keeping an eye on it.
And prayer
and becoming a little bit tech savvy. Like a lot of parents just
be really, on social media.
Yes. Parents just really bury their heads in the sand when it comes to this kind of thing. And I get it. You know, you didn't grow up with this. It's tough. It's always something new. Now they on TikTok. What is a TikTok? I don't know, but that's your job. You know what I mean? As a parent to know where your kids are online and what they're doing and how to engage with them on these platforms.
If you don't know, and it's kind of hard because I was a kid and I was slick at hiding stuff from my parents too. So I can't for a second assume that my kids are, you know, these perfect angel kids who are not also hiding stuff from me. But since I'm on social media, I may not necessarily know what they're doing, but I know what's on social media. And if I know what's on there, I could be like, whoa, all right, this is what's going on. Like Stephanie said, let's have the conversation, you know, let's talk about this, that, and the third, because you know what they're looking at, you know, especially if it's popular, especially if it's trending, especially if everybody's doing it, you know, they've got the algorithm where everybody uses the same song or they use the same, whatever the filter, whatever the case may be. If I know that, I can use that as ammunition to have that conversation with my kid versus not knowing anything. And then something blow up or something happened personally.
And your kid unfortunately dies because of the cinnamon challenge.
Yeah. And you trying
and you
to
didn't
go
even
back.
Know there was a cinnamon challenge. You know what I mean?
Trying to go like, back, try to do some investigative journalism, find out what went wrong or when did it happen, you know, versus you kind of knowing, all right, this trend started here. And, you know, these are the people that's doing it the most. All right, let me make sure. Let me have a conversation to find out where my kids are.
Right. Before their body gets burnt over 70% because they were in the flamethrower challenge.
Yeah. I actually have a friend who has, I guess you would call him a preteen, just turned 12. And then she's got, twin boy and a girl who are, I think 16. They're in the 11th grade. And what she does is just, hey, let me see your phones right now. She gives no opportunity you to
spot
click
check.
Anything.
Spot check
on the phone immediately. Right. And they're phone all using check, iPhone. Homie. So she has it set up so she can actually put her thumb on it and get into that phone and see anything. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, they can still be slick, try to do like a, encrypted folder. They're not using Android. So I don't know if you can do that on, you know, on iOS device, but like you're going to try to hide something somewhere. Like they can, but they're also children. And they just don't think far enough ahead. So when I do my spot check, it's like right when they're in the middle of doing something.
Right.
Let me see your phone right now. You literally have a second to hand that phone over. So it's like, let me find something on this phone.
In that vault app.
Yeah. It's like, you know, she's not given any time for you to do anything before she checks on the phone. And she's like, and you know, unfortunately, I haven't found anything yet. Do I know that they're doing other stuff? Yes, but at least I am keeping it in their mind that I'm going to be checking. And just the fact that they know that I'm going to be checking, it makes it something that it is cognizant to them to, hey, you know what? Mom's probably going to find this if I'm on this. So maybe I shouldn't be on it in the first place.
That's right.
Yeah. So y'all, it is playoff season. Playoffs just started this past weekend. Steph, I know you're not a huge, huge fan. We were talking in the green room a little bit about what happened to the Dallas Cowboys, and Terrence and I are both kind of smiling at that. But something that was really interesting that happened this past weekend was that NBC actually paid for one of the games, but instead of showing it on NBC, they showed it on Peacock. So you literally, in order to watch the game, had to sign up a Peacock subscription in order to watch an NFL playoff game. Now, generally, for the most part, over the history of NFL playoffs games, they have always come on terrestrial TV. And then you would have, like, you know, certain games would be picked up in certain markets, regardless of whether you had a local team or not. That was not the case with the Kansas City Chiefs versus Miami game. That game, you had to get a Peacock subscription. And I'll be honest, I thought that it was going to tank miserably because so many people were complaining about it. That's not what happened, though. It turns out that this is the most streamed live event in U.S. history. So that game got 23 million viewers, and 30% of all internet traffic was people watching that game on Saturday night. So I wanted to just kind of talk about, is streaming the way that this is going, or is terrestrial TV, particularly for sports, is that a thing that's about to go the way of the dodo?
Well, my only problem with this is if there was another way to watch the game, the fact that the only way you could watch the game is go on Peacock and create an account and watch it. Yeah, Peacock can say, oh, you know, this is the most live stream event in history, over 23 million viewers. Yeah, if that's the only way to watch it. So I got to go over there and do it. So I don't know how boastful now, if it was simulcast on ESPN and then or whatever, NBC and also on Peacock, then let's talk about how the numbers look and whatever right. The case may be. But ultimately, it's American NFL football. People are going to complain, and then going to go watch that game. So right. It really, you know.
It wasn't the flex they thought it was when you didn't give people any other option. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my whole thing was, you know, I obviously wasn't going to watch the game, could care less. But that the number you threw out, Rob, about that being 30% of internet traffic, makes me wonder how internet service providers are going to respond to this. Cause I can remember talking about, you know, a few years back around net neutrality and what ISPs were going to be able to do to start managing and controlling the data. Mm-hmm. I can totally see, you know, them doing something to pile on basically, to the fact that you have to go to Peacock to watch it, but now you also have to be in a specific data tier in order to watch something like this as well.
1 gig or higher.
Exactly. Because of the increased, you know, internet traffic that we are anticipating, you have to bump up to the next tier of speeds and da, 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 da. So I definitely see internet service providers trying to get in on this and capitalize and make a little extra money themselves.
That will be real interesting if we do that. Now, the current administration, they just put their own person in to where net neutrality rules are kind of loosening up a little bit. But there's an election in like 10 months.
Right.
That could change all of that again. So we just don't know. Here's the other part of this. One of you said that this is not the flex that they thought it was going to be, even though it got these kind of numbers. The Americans are collectively pissed off at NBC for doing this because it's like every tweet, no one is saying, oh man, I love that they put this game on Peacock. Yeah. They're saying, I hate the fact that I had to go install an app to watch a freaking NFL playoff game, something I've never had to do before. And people are adamant about, I am signing up to this and I'm canceling it right now. Because I don't know if this is on Android, but I know on iPhone, if you sign up to Peacock right now, and then as soon as you sign up, you cancel it, you still get to use it for that free week or whatever. Even though you cancel it, it doesn't cancel until your free week is up. So I've just seen post after post after post. It's like, yeah, I signed it up, logged in, jumped through the hoops they made me jump through. And before I even watched the game, I wouldn't cancel my account. So I will never get billed by them.
Even that, like, is not the, like, if you have such a problem with it, don't watch it.
That's what I was saying.
You vote with your dollars in this instance.
Oh,
If you was that mad that you had to go on social media and say, oh, Peacock, what a ripoff, what this crap. Don't watch it. One game is not going to ruin your life if you don't get to see this one playoff game and send that message to NBC that you need to be putting these games on regular broadcast television like normal. And vote with your dog. Cause I know I saw one of the tweets with the, you had to pay for Peacock, but they still were showing ads in the middle of the game. So I'm like, so yep. You're still showing ads and I gotta pay? Like y'all double dipping now. Like literally don't watch the game.
Imagine the headline if it said, Peacock NFL wild card was the lowest watched event in U.S. history with only 2 million viewers.
Right. How quick would that be back on regular NBC next week?
It might have came out by halftime, might have been on NBC or something like that. Right. If that would have been the case. But I was talking with folks in our Discord. So anybody who's interested in having conversations with us, you can head over to Discord. You can get there by going to thetechjohn.com/Discord. And you can, so if you want to sign up on Discord, but that is where we generally have our conversations. But on Discord this week, we were talking about that. And I actually, based off of some other things that I've read, was thinking, this might arguably be the lowest rated playoff game in NFL history.
NFL sports fans.
I underestimated. Right. And see, here's the thing. This is why I believe so many people have, I gotta see this game. You know, even though I'm upset, I'm gonna go do this. Betting has changed everything. Betting has been around for a long time, but it used to be back in the day, if you wasn't in Vegas or Atlantic City, you kind of had to have a bookie for it. But now with all the online gambling that you can do, it's just changed the way people perceive watching these games. They have to watch them because like,
I got money on this.
I got money on it. Right. Or I want to change my bet based off of, cause you can make bets literally based off of the quarter you're in. So I think that drives a lot of it as well. But, I was kind of shocked. I was like, oh, it wasn't last. It was first. It's like, this is the most that anything has ever been. And we're not talking about football games. We're talking about nothing in U.S. history has ever been streamed more than that Kansas City Miami game. So I'm just sitting back looking at, you know, Roger Goodell and was like, oh yeah, that worked. Let's do more of that. So it is going to be really interesting to see where this goes because so many Americans are really upset. And it's not even just Americans. You've actually got Congress on both sides of the aisle who are upset the fact that they can't watch these NFL games. So when you start getting, you know, when you get Congress folks that agree on stuff and are mad about it, you know, things can often happen. So we'll have to see how this goes. So I wanted to get into this story, Terrence, that you had posted up about AI, how they've actually removed some of the military application limits. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on there?
Yeah, basically OpenAI specifically, they pretty much say, I'll just go ahead and read the quote. As of January 10th, OpenAI's usage on guidelines no longer included a prohibition on, quote, military and warfare uses in existing language that obligates users to prevent harm. The policy now only notes a ban on utilizing OpenAI technology like its large language models to, quote, develop or use weapons. So basically, it's not necessarily the wild west, but now basically it green lights for defense contractors. It green lights governments. It green lights these companies to say, all right, what can we do with this? Now, necessarily, they're not going to go say, ChatGPT, tell me how to make a Patriot missile. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. But now you've opened the door for these military and defense contractors to say, hey, let's poke around this and see what we can do.
Why do you think the whole Sam Altman thing happened in the first place?
Right.
This is exactly what he wanted to be able to do is go after that government money.
Mm-hmm. Defense contract money.
Yeah, exactly. This does not surprise me one bit.
I think the technical term is cream, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Literally, this was the whole point of him getting rid of that board, that initial nonprofit governance board and going rogue so they can get this back.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing here is that you can talk about it, but you can't use it specifically. Like you said, you can't use ChatGPT. How do I make a Patriot missile? Mm-hmm. But what if the AI is the weapon? Because that's what I think you know, wars of the future are going to be fought way different than the wars than we fought behind. I mean, I'm sure there's always going to be gunfire and bombs and explosion and planes and boats and all that kind of stuff. That's probably not going anyway. But you can do a whole lot of damage if you can shut somebody's electrical grid down. Mm-hmm. You can do a whole lot of damage if you can literally shut down trash pickup, you know, for a city with 2-3 million people in it. You can do a whole lot of damage if you can shut the water down, for a city of 400,000 people. Those are the ways that you're going to actually see a lot of AI, in my opinion, being used. So it's not going to be you using AI to build a weapon. The AI is the weapon. You're going to use the AI to figure out how can you attack someone's infrastructure. And I think that that's going to be just a way that wars are fought, because you could do so much damage by shutting down someone's electrical. I mean, you literally send someone back to the 1800s, the early 1800s at that, if they have no power.
I guess. It's just the plot of that, Leave the World Behind, that Netflix movie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is kind of like that.
Oh, plot. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the taking out the military and warfare terminology just opens them up to be able to pursue deals in military and warfare. I think, you know, like you said, you don't have to explicitly be looking for information on how to build weapons or do any harm in that way. But I think this just clears the path for OpenAI as a company to pursue those types of contracts.
And that's big money.
Absolutely.
That's money.
It's like a blank check. It's basically a blank check.
Our government particularly is never going to spend less money on defense than it did right. before. And it's always going to go up. Both sides of the aisle unanimously say, all right, we need this defense money to go in there because all these things going on. So like you said, Stephanie, it makes perfect sense for Sam Altman and them to say, nah, we ain't trying to be all kumbaya.
No, absolutely not. We're trying to get this shmoney. and if they can be the first contractor in, mm-hmm. you know, under this AI banner, then you know what I mean?
The rules.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's please. I mean, it's smart. It's chess, not checkers, mm-hmm. and it's super smart. But you know, it doesn't bode well for the rest of humanity. So
here's one of the things that I thought was interesting, though, because it was there. OpenAI, they actually put rules on a lot of things that they're changing, or that they want to stay the same. So one of the things that I saw that was like kind of interesting is politicians still can't use ChatGPT for political ads. And I think they've made the calculation is that we don't know who's going to be good, who's going to be great, who's going to be awesome at making these ads, that it's our platform putting out all kind of fake stuff and all kind of lies. So we just don't want anybody to do it. So it's like, there is definitely some self-preservation there, because if you are a government contractor or you are the government and you're using for that, well, that's how y'all used it. But when it comes to these politicians use the system that we've created and it wreaks havoc on an election, it's going to come back to us. They're going to blame us on that. So, I just thought that was really interesting. And so, you know, I was just saying that these weren't the only rules that, you know, OpenAI put out some rules on PTs as far as not allowing to have ones for like, what is it, virtual girlfriends and stuff like that. For those who don't know, they opened up their GPT store last week, where it gives developers and folks like us, because you don't really have to be a coder, you can create this stuff just with a little bit of know-how. You can go in and create these GPTs, and they're like, but we don't want you creating girlfriends on here. We don't want like pornographic stuff on here. And it's like, it ain't even been a week. And there's so many keywords that they are now shutting down. So I don't know who stuck this one in here, but this one's interesting.
That was mine. Yeah. Okay. It says, we don't allow GPTs dedicated to fostering romantic companionship or performing regulated activities. Regulated activities aren't clarified. In the same paragraph, OpenAI states that GPTs that contain profanity in their name or depict or promote graphic violence aren't allowed either. But yeah, they've been trying to get around the idea of girlfriend, and like sweetheart and different things like that, putting that in the title. Sex escort and things like that. So they basically don't want you creating chatbots that can become girlfriends, which on one hand, considering, the one chatbot that encouraged the boy to kill himself, and he did, mm-hmm. you know, recently, I see why you would not want that. But
see why you cannot try.
Right. But on the other hand, you know, in this time and in the year of our Lord 2024, when psychologists across the board are claiming that men in particular and young men in particular are lonelier and commit suicide at rates higher than any other group, like maybe this is the solution for that. And maybe we don't have incels anymore because
if they can have their little robot girlfriends.
If they can have their little robot girlfriends. Like, I'm just saying, you know, like, could that be a solution?
Right.
For, because it's a problem. It's a real problem. Like, you think about the couple different, a few of the last mass shooters, you know, were these people that wrote these manifestos about Chads and, you know, they were incel in nature, basically. And could something like that be avoided if you give this boy a
little pocket girlfriend?
Yes. Hey, listen, like drastic times call for drastic measures at this point. And people are dying and, you know, not just in shootings, but in suicides. And, you know, this could be a solution for that if you could figure out the tech, you know, and get the tech right. Or at least, you know, advance it along. This could be a solution for that.
You know what? If they are going to try to do it to solve male loneliness, they need to holler at Japan, because I remember watching a documentary not too long ago, probably within the last year, 18 months. And it was about how Japan is one of the world's oldest countries and its aging population. And one of the reasons that they're attributing to why their population is aging to the point that it is because there's so many young men who just aren't interested in women. But over there, they've got every type of robot, every type of AI that they literally lean into a lot of these things over in Japan. So I wonder if you will start to see American companies looking at these type of devices to where you can go and you can pay for a virtual girlfriend that actually may have a robotic body or something like that. And there's all kind of movies where we see this kind of stuff. It's like, is the first thing you're going to do when they can make an Android, I'm not talking about the phone. I'm talking about an actual robot that can look and feel and sound human. People are going to do what they do because that's, you know, that's how people. So I just wonder if we are ultimately getting
on our way to Ex Machina, basically.
Yeah. Cautionary tale.
I have a question/theory. We can save it till after hours where we talk about it. But I'm curious. Yes, it is a problem that boys are feeling more lonelier. And they don't have the outlet or whatever the case may be, you know, and I also know that as soon as ChatGPT opened up, people are going to figure out how to use this for, you know, relationship/pornographic, sexual, whatever the case may be. We all kind of know that, you know, trying to stop that was damn near impossible. But I'm at the bigger question though. I'm curious as to, with the men being more lonely, the boys being more lonely nowadays, and we got incel and that whole thing. I'll save it to later, but I want to pose the question as to why we think that is. But like I said, continue with the show. We'll talk about that.
Well, later. You know what? That is a good lead into our after party that we do always after we record the live episode of the Tech John. So let me just tell folks how they can get there. If you would like to support the show, you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. That is the Tech JAWN. Over there, you will find multiple tiers, any one of which gets you access to our live stream, which we're recording right now, and our after party that comes in about 5 or 10 minutes, where we have deeper conversations and talk about other stuff. So once again, head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn, the Tech JAWN. But before we get there, Steph, you have a spotlight that we're going to go through this week. So why don't you tell us about Chaz Sims?
All righty. So Chaz Sims is the CEO and founder of Y Systems, a logistics firm he started in 2014. Sims received a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science and a Master's degree in Engineering in Computer Science from MIT. Through Y Systems, a company he started when he was a college student, Sims has brought big changes to the delivery industry. The company uses machine learning to autonomously route and dispatch deliveries, everything from parcels to retail goods to food and beverage. The software created by Wise Systems uses artificial intelligence to help companies operate at peak efficiency when making deliveries, while also working to give the environment a break by reducing mileage and the carbon footprint. With Wise's software, delivery recipients can know within as little as a 20-minute window when to expect a delivery. The startup has raised a total of $73.1 million in funding. Wise Systems raised $50 million in funding in a Series C for its last round, led by Tiger Global Management, with participation from new and existing investors that include Section 32, Valo Ventures, Gradient Ventures, and Prologis Ventures. Sims was named in the Forbes 30 Under 30 list in 2021 because of Wise Systems' impact during the pandemic, providing necessary assistance for companies like Anheuser-Busch and Lyft to keep running in the face of economic challenges. So shout out to Chaz Sims doing his thing in the logistics delivery space.
Yeah, we cannot underestimate or underappreciate what this young brother's stuff is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it gets delivered to you, it's logistics. You know, everything that comes from FedEx is logistics. Everything that comes from UPS is logistics. You said Anheuser-Busch, they deliver stuff to a lot of stores from from their breweries. That's all logistics. Everything that is moving in a truck, in a plane, on a train,
DoorDash, in a car, Uber Eats,
all of that,
all of it.
So as I was reading through this article, you know, through your write up, and then actually went and started seeing some articles on what this bus company is doing, I fully expect that you're going to see the United States Post Office or FedEx or UPS is like, yeah, y'all are us now.
Amazon, anything
for billions. I mean,
I'm ready for him. He'll be acquired tomorrow. He's going to get acquired like tomorrow. And it'll be interesting, though, that I'd be curious because of what's happening right now with the Suez Canal and I don't want to get too political, but there's global events affecting our supply chain once again. Currently, I'm wondering if his software will be able to account for that for companies and kind of, you know, help people get things that they need, even when we're, you know, facing these sort of critical supply chain issues, you know, with shipping and stuff like that. I don't know. But he's about to get a bag. He's about to get a bag. Definitely.
I certainly hope so. Simply because as of importance, logistics, transportation, delivery is, with all of us going to more of a click, 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 order it online and expect somebody to have it to my door. Only $73 million in funding and only raise $50 million in Series C funding.
Well, we know why that is. Because he should be a unicorn already. At this point. Yeah.
Already. He should be the post office. Yeah. Already he should be. Yeah. Amazon should be trying to either acquire them or build a competitor or whatever the case may be. But continue.
Things that make you go,
We will definitely be keeping an eye on Chaz Sims and, you know, the good work that that young man is doing. So, y'all, that is a nice tight hour. I'm looking. We are right at the top of the hour right now. So, it's like we almost planned it. Like we almost, you know, did a whole rundown and timed it and all that kind of stuff. It's like everything comes together. So, Tech Life, Steph. This is the first time this year you get to do this, but why don't you go ahead and tell the folks how they can get at you and what you've got going on?
You can follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph, or head on over to my website at stephaniehumphrey.com. Check out the book, buy one, and all that good stuff.
And you can find me all over the internet at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH. In Stephanie's absence last week, we had Nika Monfort.
Shout out, Nika.
My other half of my other podcast that we run, Snob OS Podcast, where we talk all things Apple and then some. So definitely check us out. New shows air every Friday.
And I am at Rob Nunwood on all the things. And we are also at The Tech John on all the things. And just on, you know, on a personal note, for those who do not know, I'm actually one of the co-hosts over at Daily Tech News Show. So you can find me there. I'm on every Thursday and maybe one other day a week. And then I also do Daily Tech Headlines 3 days a week over there. So if you want to find out just some of the more newsy stuff that I'm doing, go check me out at Daily Tech Headlines and Daily Tech News Show. So with that, till we meet again in a week's time.
Peace.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.